Hey everybody, it's Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, and Stephen Brunt. And Stephen, I have unexplained back pain, probably from carrying the show, right?
That's got to be it. I think that's entirely possible, Ben. I think that's. I think you should, when you report it to your medical practitioner, you should mention that.
Yeah, I need to see a massage therapist, but I. And maybe this is saying too much. I don't like getting massages. I'm a very ticklish person. Mm-hmm. is that revealing too much about myself?
I'm kind of with you on that one, actually.
Yeah. My wife has told me, hey, get a pedicure. It'll feel great. And I was totally open to the idea. I hated it. We'll never do it again. I was in just not agony. I was just totally uncomfortable for the entire 30-minute process. I same reason I don't like to get massages. I think, though, I'm in dire need of a massage or to, I don't know, roll over backwards on a garbage can or something. Like, I need help here. It hurts to breathe. Okay.
Well, that could be serious because that may get in the way of being alive. So you might want to deal with that.
All right. Well, I think I've got at least 2 hours in me. Today's tough story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota, your local Toyota store since 1969. Come for the history, stay for the future. Dufferin, north of Steeles. Can you believe it? The Toronto Blue Jays scored 8 runs thanks to a couple of homers from Danny Jansen. Vlad, his second homer since May 5th. The other side of the coin is they still went 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position. And how about this, Stephen? Last time they scored 8. They lost their next 5. So you take the good with the bad, but that was a long time coming.
Yeah, it sure was. The other eight was Cleveland, wasn't it? Was that one of those Cleveland
games?
It was
Cleveland, their worst losing streak of the season. They lost the last two in Cleveland, got swept in a 2-gamer by the Yankees and lost the first game against Tampa.
Yes. In that instant, that was when it felt like the dam had broken. That the balance of the cosmos had been restored, that the great offensive juggernaut that is the Toronto Blue Jays was suddenly free to go and be itself, and then, of course, they weren't. So that's why I'm not going too far here with what happened last night. But you know what was good last night, aside from just the ability to kind of relax and enjoy it without the usual tension that the Jays have brought to almost every game this year? But so they faced a ton of velo in this series, this little short series with St. Louis. But last night, facing a guy who was throwing 102, but he couldn't throw strikes.
Right.
But rather than get themselves out by chasing balls outside the zone and rolling over on them and turning them into ground balls or popping them up, They didn't play into that last night. They took some first strikes. They didn't chase with the on 3 ball counts. They took another pitch, and look, there's a little luck thrown in. Guy loses a fly ball in the lights. It turns into a triple, but that's the kind of stuff that's been happening to the Jays during this stretch more than for them. So that should even out at a certain point. But I thought more better at bats. And Vladdy did hit a ball that I'm still not sure he totally squared up and hit it 430 feet, so he's not turned into a 90-pound weakling. Like, he's still the same guy. But I thought it wasn't as frustrating to watch offensively. We're going to totally ignore Kevin Gausman here, but Kevin Gausman went out and did what he's done essentially every start this year, which is be great. So, That was nice as well, and it was nice that he had a little bit of breathing room and that Charlie Montoyo didn't have to overthink the bullpen. He just let's get this game to the end one way or another. And they got on a plane to California, and I'm sure they all breathed a great sigh of relief and were happy and smiling, and now they get to play show against Shohei Ohtani tomorrow night, which will
be
fascinating.
Who also throws 100.
I believe he does, yes. He throws 100 and has an exit velocity of 100 plus. So that'll be interesting. It'll be, once they do loosen up a little bit, it can't get worse offensively. And that's going to be a huge test. But this is I still believe this is a good offensive team, even though I have 2 months or almost 2 months of evidence telling me that they're not.
Yeah, no, they are. because, again, Teoscar Hernandez is not going to OPS 500, and Vlad is not going to OPS 750, and they're not going to hit 190 with runners in scoring position, and maybe yesterday wasn't, like, the turning point, and now, today is the first day of the rest of their lives or something, but no, it's part of the solution. I mean, look at the Red Sox, how moribund offensively they were early on in the season. They're scoring, like, 20 runs a game now. Trevor Story is the reincarnation of Babe Ruth. This happens, right? That's a good offense. They could not score. And, man, did it really cost them early on? They were like 10 games under 500, right? Baseball. They're encroaching on 500 again, and people are talking about them being back in the mix for a playoff spot, and we're not having the Xander Bogaerts conversations anymore. But, yeah, no, I also like the process. The 8 walks were good. I kind of want to have a Danny Jansen conversation here, Steven, because since September 1st of last season, you wrap up his season last year into the perilously few games he's played this year. I understand that. But it's not a totally meaningless sample, especially considering what he has said about the process since he returned off the IL last season. He's hitting .310 with a .368 on base and a .759 slug for an .1127 OPS. Mm-hmm. He said he's leaning into the pull field. We don't have to say it again, but I will say it again. This guy became a major leaguer on the strength of his bat. He had to learn how to be an average and now an above-average defender behind the plate. This guy was going to be an offense-first player behind the plate. But he spent so much time working on his defense, perhaps forgot about what created the prospect that he had become. Now, the Blue Jays at the moment feel like they're pretty rich in catching depth because Alejandro Kirk has taken some strides defensively this season. I think despite the rough go of it offensively this year, he's reverted to normal form. And you know what? Maybe not catching 4 days a week is helping him with that. Gabriel Moreno, despite only hitting one homer in AAA, still hitting well over .300. And he could probably arrive this season, might not until next year. It really, like, if Danny Jansen is this, I mean, he's not an 1127 OPS guy, but if he's in a, we talk about this all the time when it comes to that position. The bar offensively is so low. It is so, so low, like below average. If you're a 700 OPS guy that plays good defense behind the plate, you're a huge commodity. And in theory, and I'm not saying that this is fact, but in theory, the Blue Jays have three of those guys. And various levels of defense, and I really couldn't tell you what kind of defense Moreno plays, but the reviews are good. Boy, it's a great thing to have because so few teams have them. And when you have a guy that can do that and can play 5 days a week, I mean 4 days, 5 days a week, those guys win you World Series like Buster Posey. Now your career doesn't last 20 years generally, but I don't know. I'm starting to buy into what Danny Jansen's selling me.
Yeah, me too. I was thinking last night, and again, you're right about the catchers don't catch a lot. Well, some guys have had long careers, but Buster Posey has, you know, Joe Mauer had to change position eventually. We all know how grueling it is. But as long as Danny Jansen can crouch, he's going to play for a long time. He's a legit number one big league catcher. Is he an all-star catcher? Well, this year he might be. if he does this, he continues with this till the all-star break. Yeah, he's an all-star. But he's going to have a job as a starting catcher in the big leagues for as long as he can physically do it. And that's something. You think of some of the, like, a lot of guys hang on around the edges and backup catchers or back and forth between AAA and the majors, and guys have long careers doing that. But Danny Jansen's several levels above that. People know the story. He was in the minor leagues. He got eyeglasses. He started to hit. He jumped, three levels or four levels in 1 year. And then he got to the big leagues, and they threw a ton of responsibility at him as a defensive catcher because they didn't really have he became the guy in the organization. And I think you can't underestimate what it takes to do, you know, not just the physical part of that job, but the running a game. And I know they give you all kinds of data, and you have a little card on your arm now and walkie-talkie to the pitcher, and et cetera. But you know, you are still you still there's a weight there that you don't have if you're playing the outfield and you know you wait for somebody to yell at you to take four steps to the left. It's a different thing, and I think that has to sap some of the rest of your game. I think it does drain some of that away, and I think that is what we saw with Alejandro Kirk, because like think about that guy, like he's on a talk about being on a fast track. You know, he went from mm-hmm. single A to the big leagues to we just like your bat to you know, you're going to catch a whole bunch, you know, in a contending team.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's evolved really quickly. Like he's pretty good now, at least in terms of framing, and he's better throwing to second base, throwing out runners than I ever thought he would be. And I assume he calls a reasonable game, and some pitchers seem to, to work really well with him. So yeah. So you get those two. Both those guys, I think, are big league catchers. I know, watching Kirk, you still have to kind of wrap your head around the build and say, is this guy really going to have a long career, or is he a novelty act? But I'm beyond the novelty act thing. And then, as you say, the best catching prospect in baseball. Now that Baltimore has promoted their guy, the best catching prospect not in the majors is in Buffalo. So, yeah, you got a little bit of a logjam there, but boy, that's. I would say in the entire history of this organization, they have had nothing like this, like at that position.
And they've listen. Every prospect is generally starts as either a catcher, or a shortstop, or a center fielder, right? And then if they can't hack it, they move off those positions. But you want to exhaust every opportunity for a player to play defensively up the middle. I mean, Carlos Delgado, a catcher as well. And this is not a problem at the moment. And if it is a problem, it's a good problem. There is physically not room for all three of those guys on the major league team right now, I don't think. Well, especially now that you have Matt Chapman for 2 years, right? I got very excited, perhaps, about Gabriel Moreno's potential transition to third base, that he played a couple innings there at the end of last season. But that idea has sailed, considering Matt Chapman is, again, under not just team control, under contract for the next 2 years with the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's a position where you do have attrition. I mean, Danny Jansen just only recently got back off the injured list. So maybe it's not something you do, but boy, it's hard not to think about the major assets the Blue Jays have come trade deadline maybe being behind the plate. And I don't know if it's hard for me to pick right now who would be the guy that you dangle and trade. Kirk is the guy that we've heard before that was involved in the Jose Ramirez package, but it's hard for me to imagine that, you know, the Blue Jays play out this entire 5-year run of contention with all three of those guys in the organization.
No, I think we're the clock's ticking here. So the question is when it makes the most sense to make that deal, when you maximize the value. And you know, again, you want to be. They're going to have to deal somebody. I'm not saying that one of these guys is secretly bad, and you want to get rid of him before people find out that he's bad. I think they're all really good. But you
this isn't an Austin Martin situation.
I don't think it's that. No. So you know, two of the three the fact that Kirk now has played enough in the big leagues that people have seen him at this level. He's not a mystery. They can see it, and they can again see what he's done defensively. He's the logical one to deal in a lot of ways. But you know, the other thing is though, Ben, you know, they have carried three catchers for a good stretch of this season. It's not optimal. I don't think you want Gabriel Moreno to be that third guy, because you want him playing, right? They want him catching this year. They want is because of especially some of the injury stuff he's gone through. You want him out there playing pretty close to every day, and that's not that doesn't make sense for a contending team right now. So I kind of don't think that deal is this trade deadline. It certainly could be this coming off season, and it's a great commodity to have. You know, there is somebody in baseball who would embrace one of those three, any of those three guys, as a first string catcher. And yep. I would include Kirk in that now. I think there's a team in baseball that would look at any of those three guys and say, that's our guy. That's the guy that's going to catch 4 out of 5 days a week.
Well, and look, the Yankees are pleased with their catching situation getting, I know that Trevino had a walk-off hit yesterday, but getting next to no offense out of that position, mm-hmm. because it's a defense first position, but if these guys can be somewhere close to average or above average, it's an incredible coup. I was also thinking, you know, back to our conversation yesterday about how this Blue Jays team has gone the other way so much this season, and how they could, you know, Danny Jansen's kind of got the mentality maybe that everybody should have. I was also thinking about that Chris Black tweet storm that I kept referencing, and boy, it stuck with me because I kept thinking about it all day yesterday, that while it's true, every Major League Baseball team has to play very good Major League pitchers on a daily basis, that just by actual fact, the Blue Jays have faced the hardest fastballs in baseball to this point. That maybe, you know, facing so many guys that throw 100, it's hard to pull those guys, and maybe that's the reason they've been going the other way this season.
Yeah, I think it is, yes, because they faced a ton of velocity. You're right. We've also heard over and over and over again about, you know, I'm at my most effective when I'm thinking about hitting the ball up the middle. And if you're trying to hit the ball up the middle against the velocity guy, you're probably going to end up hitting the ball to the opposite field a fair bit. So I do think I think for some guys it's a way of, you know, no pun intended, but kind of centering themselves, right? Kind of getting themselves right if things get out of whack mechanically. Think, okay, as long as I'm just going to think about hitting it right over the second base bag, and whatever happens, happens. But with Jansen, it's kind of like, how many conversations have we talked about guys getting pull happy? That they go up there and try, and they're trying to pull everything, and that gets them in trouble, and they just end up rolling over on baseballs. So, but it's worked for him. Like, that mental approach has worked for him. I guess just saying, look, this is who I am, and until teams force me not to do it, which is what will happen, they will start to pitch him differently, and they will try and make that much, much harder for him to do. You know, there's still going to be the odd mistake, but that is something you could counterattack with your pitching. I just think you want him comfortable. You know, if it works for him, and you know, we talked about all of the hitting data and the hitting coaching and all of the ways you try and fix guys up, but when they're in a slump, but you know, maybe sometimes it's just, hey, do what you've been doing since you were 12 years old, because you know what, it got you to the big leagues.
Yeah, no, I feel like that might work for Vlad, honestly.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. Lastly, you mentioned Kevin Gausman, who, man, the walks per nine creeping up to one. It's 0.8 now, and he walked two. I don't like that at all. But he it might not surface level look like he's far and away the leader in the American League to be the Cy Young Award winner, and maybe he's not. But Verlander's 1.22 ERA kind of jumps off the page. Gausman's not far behind at 2.25. But I was looking at his Fangraphs WAR, which again is not everything. You have to take, you know, everything has context. He is blowing away the field in all of baseball in starting pitcher WAR at 2.7. He's a win ahead of the guys in second place, Tarik Skubal, out of Detroit. And the way Fangraphs calculates their WAR, it's based primarily on fielding independent pitching, and Baseball Reference does something else. But yeah, his fielding independent pitching is 1.3. Like, he's been, it's unbelievable the returns on Kevin Gausman, Steven. It is, I don't know what else to say other than this guy has been absolutely everything you could have possibly hoped for.
Yeah, well, number one, tip your cap to the organization for going out and getting him. And a guy that they wanted for some time, but you know, going out and being aggressive and getting him in the open market. We also now know that the plan A or plan B in that case may not have been the reigning Cy Young Award winner, might not have been an option anyway because of his vaccine status. But they got a guy who is at the height of his powers. Like, it's fun to watch, isn't it, Ben? Like, just
yes.
The sense that, you know, when he threw 102 pitches last night or something like that, and there wasn't really a moment in that game, he's a little wilder than usual, I guess, but that's certainly relative. But that mix of the, you know, really nice velocity that he can
97
he can pull out.
A couple of times.
Yeah, 97 at the high end, and then the splitter. And it's just watching kind of a, you know, a master at work. I love watching him pitch. And there's no, it's not max effort. It's he knows how to manage a baseball game. He knows how to manage his way through a lineup. I think he's obviously done it a lot, and early in his career suffered a bit. He was, you know, again, a guy who was always a highly touted prospect right from day one. But you know, Baltimore, there were certainly some growing pains for him in the AL East. But he's figured a lot of stuff out, and I don't. There's no reason why. Like you watch him and you say, well, you know, you don't worry about his next start, because mm-hmm. I think his next start is going to look like that one, or it might be better.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the splitter plays. Like, yeah, if you're yeah, locating 97, and it's fun to watch people swing at the splitter, because it looks yeah. just like the fastball, and it's one of the best pitches in baseball. Anyways, day off for the Blue Jays today before starting a weekend series in Anaheim over the weekend. That was today's top story, brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. Oh, and yes, it is a 3-1 series stranglehold. The Edmonton Oilers taking it over the Flames. And I got to say, I know, you know, sports, well, obviously sports don't always play out the way you think they're going to. But when Mike Smith allows yes. the tying goal from 175 feet after the Oilers led 3-1 and it looked like they were going to run away with this thing. Oh, I thought for sure that was the beginning of the end. And the Flames were going to come back and even the series. And all of a sudden, yeah, the total narrative of the series had flipped. But man, kudos to Edmonton for having the intestinal fortitude to play through that. Evander Kane with another 2 goals. He's got 11 goals in 10 games so far this postseason. It's unbelievable the postseason he and Connor McDavid are having. I mean, they're probably related. I think a lot of the focus goes to Connor McDavid.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm starting to think about this Oilers team hoisting the Stanley Cup in a matter of weeks.
A little ways to go. Yeah. A couple of rather large hurdles probably ahead. But I'll tell you, it's funny watching games sometimes and whisper, but when I'm not working, which is most of the time now, I'm not grinding it out on deadline as I did for a couple of decades. But I often think, you know, you still think like a columnist when you're watching a game, sometimes think, okay, what am I going to do with this? And when that goal goes in, right, you think, absolutely. Okay. This yeah. is a piece of cake because, you know, Mike Smith is heroic in the game before, but everybody's yeah. waiting for him to blow up. And here the Oilers, the last game is the coronation of Connor McDavid, greatest hockey player in the history of hockey. And they get a lead in the game against them. They're ready to take the proverbial stranglehold. And then Flames get 2 quick ones to get back in it. And then what happens? The flukiest, worst goal in Stanley Cup history. And the Oilers collapse. And the series is tied. And yeah. Daryl Sutter smiles a wry smile. And off we go, right? It's the same old Oilers. And except they didn't do that. No. And they won on a night. They came back and won after that. And they won on a night when Connor McDavid wasn't like a space alien out there. He was just really good. But it didn't have to carry them. And, yeah, kind of the storyline flips, right? That if they can get through that, they can probably get through this series.
Because everything relates back to the Maple Leafs, I will do that. The Maple Leafs, yes, might have had a raw deal in Game 6, had to try and kill off a 5-on-3, couldn't do it, end up losing the game in overtime. Game 7, have a goal called back on a marginal penalty goal. Kind of a similar thing. Like, I don't know what's more deflating. That, and I understand the stakes are different. Game 7 or a Game 6 when you have a chance to salt away the series. But, yeah, a chance to take a 3-1. You think the game is won at 3-0. And it's yes. In the third period to allow a goal like that. Unless you are not a human being, I don't know how that wouldn't affect you emotionally. I just to bounce back, honestly, it's incredible. Incredible feat from the Oilers, who, yes, stranglehold, right? 3-1.
Stranglehold. That is the 3-1 is the stranglehold equation. You're correct.
All right. Lots more to get to today, including Colin Kaepernick apparently having a workout with the Las Vegas Raiders. I'll tell you why that's kind of curious timing. And Canada Soccer has revealed its squad for a game that I guess is going to happen in Vancouver on June 5th against Iran. Or maybe not. We'll talk about that. Lots more coming up later on in the program, but coming up next, we'll talk to our pal Adnan Virk of MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile Podcast as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. And Frank Cervelli, you know, he had some strong feelings about Craig Berube yesterday, Stephen, you know, in regards to not immediately denouncing some of the horrible stuff that Nazem Kadri saw online. Of course, knocks out Jordan Binnington in Game 3 on Saturday, and then gets a lot of hate messages, death threats, and much of it related to his Muslim faith. And you know, Berube was asked explicitly what he thought of that, and he said, no comment. Well, a couple days later, he has finally made a comment, and yes, he has denounced the death threats towards Nazem Kadri. I'm very happy to be joined by Adnan Virk, MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile Podcast, friend of the show as well, and proud Muslim. How's it going, Adnan?
I'm doing great, Ben. Stephen, good to be with you guys. Before we get into the serious matters of the day, I'm currently driving into New York City. One of my best friends, John Nadlin, riding shotgun, the pride of Sweeberg / Woodstock, Ryerson Radio Television Arts. We already ambushed our boy Cabby, who was on Calgary Radio earlier, so we are on a heater, and we're driving right now to the Lincoln Tunnel, Brunt Nose. That's American for Don Valley Parkway at 5:30. But we're going to go see a Broadway show tonight, Mr. Saturday Night. Billy Crystal, I cannot wait to give you guys the review next week.
Excellent. Well, I hope that if the tunnel's backed up the way I've seen it the odd time, what is it, 5:30 now, you probably will just make it for the curtain.
That's well said, but we're going to have a 75-year-old Billy Crystal warbling in our face. And by the way, Cabby and I, we love Mr. Saturday Night. Underrated movie. I don't know what you think, Brunt, but I loved it at the time. 30th anniversary. Crystal has always told people it's one of the favorites of his own, so apparently the musical is fantastic. I can't wait.
Let's bring Billy Crystal back to be a host emeritus of the Oscars, right? Like, shouldn't that happen?
That's a great call, Ben. If at some point I get to just shout it up, Billy, we need you back for the Oscars. Save us, please. It's almost amazing. Like, I don't think people appreciate how great he was. Like, he did it 8 times, and in the height of it, it was like, wow, he's really good. But I got to tell you, Bob Hope was great with the Oscars. Or, you know, Carr seems to do this. But Billy really was the gold standard, and one of the best aspects of him was he was so quick-witted. And I kept thinking this year, Ben, with what happened with Rock and Will, Billy and his army of writers, he would have written that material all night long. It would have been genius.
Yep, and he also got a piece of a pitch in spring training. He, like, fouled it off before striking out. So congrats to Billy.
Yankee super fan. He struck out on 3 pitches, but that was a cool moment. The Yankees have a new center fielder for a day. And 61, of course, terrific baseball movie.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I do enjoy that movie. All right, back to the serious matter at hand, Adnan. Yeah, it's obviously horrible, and my brain goes to the internet is horrible because it's generally a horrible, awful, terrible place. And Stephen, the smart man that he is, has not joined Twitter, and that good on him because, you know, despite the fact that there's the occasional nice thing on there, by and large, not so great. But I'm interested in Adnan and your perspective here. I mean, what don't we know about Islamophobia online? Those of us who aren't Muslim.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you asking, Ben. And by the way, slight levity before we get serious. Ben texted me earlier and said, hey, I'm going to ask you for the stars. Okay, I said, great. Thank you for giving me a heads up. I did Calgary Radio earlier, Brunt, on Tuesday. Boomer and those guys, yep. Of course, are friends. And they said to me, hey, this Nazem Kadri situation, I mean, you can speak to it. I didn't actually know the story. So I'm thinking, you can speak to it. What, I get a lot of online hatred? I get more hatred than that. We never peace. What are you talking about? So once I actually looked at the story, I was, of course, appalled. And it's really upsetting and frustrating, and I thought we were in a better place, but shame on me for thinking we were making any sort of progress. Here's the thing about Kadri. We all know he's a polarizing figure, right? He's antagonistic. Back in the day, he'd be like maybe an Esa Tikkanen or Shane Corson. Get under your nose, and there's no question. At times, he goes across the line. He's been suspended multiple times, and we all know in Toronto, a good player, somebody that fouled a favor with Mike Babcock, gets traded, now has a wonderful season with the Avalanche. He's about to get paid a giant sum of money. And I think in this instance, he was not at fault. I really don't think that Kadri had a dirty play. But fans are upset. They unleashed this hatred. What I primarily think, guys, is this. One, I'm glad that his wife actually broadcast it. Because sometimes what happens is people say, well, you know, you're being Muslim or you're being black or being Jewish, your face is vitriolic. Oh, come on. It's like that for everybody. And no, it actually isn't. So I'm glad that she actually put it out there, because when people actually see it, it's one thing to hear all this racial taunts, but when you actually see it and see the vile and the vitriol, I think it impacts anybody who has any sort of common sense and human decency, which is why I'm so happy Ben brought up Craig Berube. Because you talk about falling flat on your face. This is an easy one. This is about as easy as it gets. This is like Today in America denouncing gun violence and saying we've got to have stricter gun control. Of course we do. After Nazem Kadri, his wife posts the fact he's facing Islamophobia and the most vile things you can say about a person of our faith. All Berube has to say is, hey, as far as a player, I'm not crazy about Nazem Kadri. But anybody that wants to take shots at his faith, that's offside. Blues fans, you guys are the best. Let's be better than this, and let's not do that. The fact he had the temerity, the audacity to say, I'm not going to comment on that. Why? Why can't you comment on that? That's an easy one, guys. It's an easy one to say, hey, we're not in favor of denouncing people because of their religion. That is a huge miss by Craig Berube. I'm incredibly disappointed in him. Listen, I loved him on the Flyers. I think he's a hell of a coach, but that is a huge miss. And the fact he's now trying to come back with a mea culpa, shame on him.
Yeah, well, it almost makes it worse today. That I don't know if you read the stuff today, but so you know, Berube said, "Look, I didn't know the details of what was in those, what people were talking about," and he has First Nations heritage. He's one of, how many First Nations hockey players have been nicknamed, against their will, Chief, over the years, like all of them, right? So he probably does know a little bit of some of the underlying racism in the game, which is the subset of the underlying racism in the world. But the part I don't get, I want to extend this to the league, because the league really hasn't distinguished itself here either. As you said, it's easy. Like, this is an easy one. It's not quite hearts and prayers, but it's thoughts and prayers. But it's simple. All you have to say is this is bad. I don't approve of this. This is not acceptable. That's because it's not a hockey discussion. It's not about how long you're going to suspend a guy for it. Like, this is one where the guys in the Hockey Diversity Alliance, like, they're going to point at this and say, hang on a second. Have you guys been listening to us? Because, you always say, well, we overdo it and we overstate it and we're too, Really? Can you say that after a day like this?
Yeah, you really can't. And what happens is, one of the smartest things my old agent Nick Kahn told me was, not all minorities are created equal. He said, when I was at ESPN, he goes, people would say, we're looking for a minority hire. He goes, let me just cut through the BS. They generally want a black person. I said, okay. And he goes, they don't want black, they want Latino. He goes, they look at you and they go, okay, he's other. So he goes, if it's someone like you and a white person of a similar talent, you might get the edge. They think you get all things being equal, hey, the fact that it's a minority, okay, that's something different that will help us, yes. But be clear, not all minorities are created equal, meaning if Nazem Kadri, if it was a different athlete, if it was P.K. Subban, and it was like particularly vile stuff against blacks, if they're criticizing Black Lives Matter, et cetera, you'd better believe the league would respond. Of course they would. If there's a hotter topic, a minority that's more agreed, more in the public, of course they will. How many Muslims are there in the NHL? It's Nazem Kadri. How many Muslims are there in Canada? How many Muslims in America? 3 million people in America. That's 1% of the population. So not everyone looks at the issue the same way. They go, oh, okay. And that was kind of Nazem's point. He had a great interview on The Point on ESPN. Our buddy Arto Cal, fellow Canadian, doing a great job at ESPN. And he said oftentimes, hey, certain groups, you can kind of say a little more stuff because they don't know as much about the group. Or, hey, well, I don't have any familiarity with that religion, so, okay, well, it's like, that's what's frustrating. Not all minorities, not all backers treated equal. And I think you're right, Stephen. If it was another group, more populist, more outspoken, more upfront, of course the league and Craig Berube would be quick to denounce it. But it's not. It's kind of, it's easy pickings in this case, which is unfortunate.
Well, and the other element of this is, and I kind of alluded to it, it's, well, yeah, Stephen's smart for staying off Twitter, which he is. There's many times. Listen, everybody who is on Twitter should do yourself a favor and take like a 2-week Twitter sabbatical and see how much better you feel. Like, honestly, it's just like a phone sabbatical, really. But yeah, Twitter specifically. But this is a guy who's a young man, and your children are a little bit older than me. Like, how... asking someone to stay offline, like how much of our lives are spent online, Adnan, is that even a reasonable suggestion to somebody to try and ignore this stuff?
It's a great point, Ben. It is such a reflex now. I was at the gym, which I know is a shock to all of us listening, but I'm at the gym today, and in between reps, you know, in the past, you could just daze and daydream and think about your life and your failures or inadequacies. Now you grab your phone, and you check it. Yeah. What do? You check Twitter. You check Instagram. And now I'm looking at it, and I don't want to look at it. I have no interest in looking at it. Every tweet I'm reading is not interesting to me, nor is the Instagram. And by the way, I'm not doing a good job of the workout because I'm distracted by the stupidity of social media. So a problem is it's so available to us. Everyone's doing it. Everyone's indulging it. And like you said, my kids, my eldest boy turned 14 yesterday. My youngest is 3. These guys are all going to grow up on their phones, attached to social media. I think Brunt's smarter than all of us. Stay away if you can. In many ways, I would describe it as a necessary evil. If you asked me what value I get from social media compared to the annoyance and frustration, I'm thinking, Ben, maybe 20% value. How about you?
It feels less than that. Unless you're tweeting a lot, then it's much higher. I get to retweet.
Your Jay's tweets are fantastic. That I will stay with Twitter for that.
All right. Let's talk Jays then for a second, because they erupt for 8 runs yesterday, although they still don't hit with runners in scoring position. I mean, this is just the general thing that we're trying to get through the first quarter of this season. Is this Blue Jays offense not as good as we thought, or are we headed towards a massive, massive correction here where the Blue Jays go on a run where they score like 20 runs a game for 2 weeks or something?
I got bad news, Ben. I think it's the first one. And there's nothing more frustrating in sports than when you assess your team and you don't assess them accurately. When you say, hey, we're on the verge. Look, everyone's picking us to win the division. Blue Jays are coming. Here we go. New era, new level, all these young stars. And when you look at the evidence, you're now getting to the point. We're at the quarter mark of the season. Once you get to Memorial Day, now you're a third of the way through the season, which is literally next week in America. Of course, I know Victoria Day this past weekend in Canada. But GMs start to look and go, okay, hey, we're about a third of the way through. Once you get to end of July, it's trade deadline. And after that, it's 2 more months and the season's over. You can't just tell me, well, the bats will come around. Okay, but I'll take a couple of slow starts. But if there's 5 or 6 guys with slow starts, one would reason not everyone's going to come around. So Bo Bichette had a quiet start has improved. Great. You know, Teoscar Hernandez was hurt. Hopefully he'll come back and rake. Maybe. Lourdes Gurriel, offseason. Okay. Vladimir Guerrero, after the 3-home run game at Yankee Stadium, I know he went deep yesterday, been pretty quiet, especially with regards to that power. Matt Chapman hasn't hit at all. The guy's hitting like .183. He's not even hitting his weight. So you can argue, well, Vladdy will get hot. Okay. Teoscar's healthy. He'll do better. All right. But not everything's going to work out. And eventually, some of those bats do have to turn around. And there's nothing more frustrating, especially for this team to say, hey, their offense is great. They're going to rake. As long as the bullpen's short up, we're going to be fine. No, not exactly. It's a frustrating offense, which has been rather middling and inconsistent. And what's turned around for Toronto lately has been the starting pitching. I do ultimately think that because Gausman and Manoah are studs. I've got Manoah right now 3rd in the Cy Young conversation. You know, if all of a sudden Berríos and Ryu are better as they've been lately, hey, with a quartet of great starters and an excellent closer, Romano, you should win more games than you lose. But honestly, Ben, if you ask me in my heart, I fear that it's the Jays of those two scenarios. Are they going to start scoring runs by the bushel, or are they what they are? I fear it may be the former.
Well, although for that to be true, like it's, and I think you can narrow the conversation to 2 guys because, you know, Gurriel is a streaky guy who at times has had great months but has also been completely cold in stretches. That's his entire career so far. Chapman is going to be, he's going to walk a fair bit. He's going to strike out a fair bit. He's probably going to hit 25 home runs. That's kind of who he is. And he's going to play really good third base. But it's Vladdy and Teoscar Hernandez, you know, one guy who was a runner-up for MVP and could have been the MVP last year. The other guy who has enough of a track record and has been won the Silver Slugger that it's not – he's not kind of a fluke, a guy who had one good year. And if those two guys revert to anything like themselves, then, yeah, it may not be murderer's row, but it's got to be a above-average offense. And if those guys don't revert, aren't better than they've been the last month – then that would be really shocking, you know, because they're 2 of the best offensive players in the league.
It's true. You would think, you're right, Stephen, there'd be some reversal. Like, hey, they can't be as bad as they've been. Maybe they won't be great, but they'll be better. Now, what you have to hope then is the pleasant surprises also continue. That, like, Espinal continues to be a pleasant surprise. That Danny Jansen can have a couple of multi-home run games. That Alejandro Kirk can hit you 20 bombs. and the other 340 on base. Springer continues to be great and stay healthy. So that's my fear. I think, yes, Chapman has to be better, but then I worry, does Espinal regress a little bit?
No, it's a reasonable fear. But as you mentioned, I mean, the starting pitching has been outstanding. And if the offense is just like closer to league average than being near the bottom, then you got yourself a pretty good team. And maybe the Yankees are starting to go through it right now. I know they lost 3 in a row and reversed that with a walk-off win yesterday. Over the Orioles again. Like, I don't know what is happening with the schedule, but I guess they play the Orioles 55 times this season. I'm not sure. They put Aroldis Chapman on the IL. Jonathan Loaisiga is going on the IL right now. Giancarlo Stanton apparently awaiting an MRI with his leg, which means that Giancarlo Stanton is going on the IL, and you may not see him for a couple months. I mean, that I think if you were a Yankee fan, I think also DJ LeMahieu's got an injury concern. Like, this was the thing with the Yankees, I feel like, Adnan, is that they were playing super well, and everybody's healthy. That's a pretty darn good team, but there's so many guys on that team that have injury concerns, and maybe they're starting to show up with those injuries now.
100%. I think that is definitely the case, that ultimately the Yankees, again, this was a team, when we looked at them earlier in the year, you go, they kind of feel like last year. Their pitching isn't quite strong enough. Yes, their guys can hit, but they have an inconsistent offense. So I do think you're right, Ben. If you look at it from a purely positive perspective and say, okay, the Yankees, like Aaron Judge is not going to be Babe Ruth the rest of the year. He's on pace for 63 home runs. You know, Stanton at some point has to find something of a cold stretch. He still strikes out too much. You know, Donaldson's inconsistent, et cetera. So I do think you're right. Although every time I see them playing the Orioles, I do think of you just shaking your fist at the sky. Why, oh, why is it Yankees-Orioles again from Camden Yards? But, hey, they're enjoying that schedule right now. And another good news, again, if you want to stay positive for the Jays, the Yankees' schedule has been very favorable. If you look at the team that they've faced so far, the first, it's going to get a lot harder for the Yankees. So expect some more three-game losing streaks along the way. I think they're great, but they're not going to win 120 games this year.
Yeah, well, the Blue Jays only were able to take 2 out of 3 from the worst team in baseball at Rogers Center last weekend. So, yeah, the schedule is not as tough as it was to start the year. Adnan, always great. Enjoy Broadway show with the fellas. I mean, there's nothing better.
I mean, can you think of a more masculine thing to do, right? A big bromance right now. Me and my college buddy, John, been friends for 25 years. Mr. Saturday on Broadway. Let's go sing and dance in a musical.
That's great. Well, enjoy, Adnan. Talk next week, buddy.
See you, pal.
Thanks, boys. I'll give you the review next week. Take care.
See ya. Adnan Virk, MLB Network, NHL Network, Cinephile Podcast, friend of the show. You know, I've never seen a Broadway show. I've seen an off-Broadway show. I saw Avenue Q, which I had high expectations for. That's my problem when I go see these live shows. Honestly, even Book of Mormon, I'm a huge Trey Parker, Matt Stone guy, yeah. South Park. I couldn't, like, my expectations were so outsized for that thing, it couldn't do anything but disappoint, and it did slightly.
I liked it a lot.
It was good, but I just, like, my expectations were out of this world. Like, Team America, World Police, please. Yeah, South Park, everything that those guys do is so, so good. But yeah, and Avenue Q, same thing. I was slightly disappointed. I saw Evil Dead the musical too in Toronto once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a weird threesome. If that's your live theater experience of those three, that's an interesting eclectic mix.
Yeah, that's not normally what people do. All right,
well, it's an interesting three.
Yeah, it is. All right, before we take the break, you know what? Let's get to this. So it was breaking just before the show, actually, about 4 o'clock Eastern time today. Adam Schefter was the first to alert the world that Colin Kaepernick is actually having a workout with the Las Vegas Raiders, whether it's happening today or very soon, that this is happening. Like, a very rare one-on-one workout with an actual NFL franchise. Of course, Kaepernick has not played in the NFL since 2016. I thought, well, that's kind of curious timing. Like, what's up with that? Why is this happening? Did you know what else is happening today, Stephen? Well,
coincidence.
I'll tell you.
You're saying this is a coincidence you're about to reveal. Go ahead.
I'm just saying. I'm a little bit cynical, but John Gruden, the hearing actually just wrapped up. The NFL tried to quash the John Gruden lawsuit against them after he was dismissed by the Las Vegas Raiders after his emails, of course, with horrible, horrible thoughts and language in them, were revealed to the public. Today was the first day of that hearing, and the NFL lost its appeal to have this thing thrown out, so it will go to trial. I'm not saying necessarily that the two are related, but I think it's a very high likelihood that that is the case, because if Colin Kaepernick is good enough to be a backup today, I mean, logic would suggest that he was good enough to be a backup, you know, last half decade or so, and he's gotten, of course, no real opportunity to ply his trade.
Yeah, no, all cynicism is appropriate in this case. Like, how can you not? Over the course of those years, the fact that Colin Kaepernick did not get a shot to make a team, a legitimate shot to make a team, and look at the list of other guys who were employed holding clipboards or doing, or it says, second or third string quarterbacks in the league. And if he really indeed wanted to do that and was willing to do that, which I'll take him at his word, yeah. The league conspired and colluded, the teams in the league conspired and colluded to keep him, to blacklist him. It's simple as that, right? It's there's no other logical explanation. So why that blacklist? And we all know, yes, of course, the Raiders and Mark Davis, they do their own thing. They're the rebellious spawn of Al Davis. They buck the NFL. Well,
boy,
not so sure about that, actually. Not so sure about that in this modern era.
Well, and that's the other thing, because, I mean, Adam Schefter, I think rightly so, has come under fire recently for like some dubious journalistic practices. And you can speak to this, Stephen. Read the story on ESPN.com about this. I mean, it's revealed in there that, yeah, Mark Davis channeling his father Al, who made Art Shell the first African-American head coach, is giving him maybe he hasn't, nothing's happened yet. He's gotten a workout. Again, there's nothing other than surface-level reporting here, and the implication that this is, again, 6 years after the guy played a down in the NFL, and now we're supposed to be praising the Las Vegas Raiders because they're having Colin Kaepernick in for a workout in what could be a total distraction tactic because John Gruden is also in court in Las Vegas today? I got to say, Adam Schefter, who's getting paid by the NFL, obviously, getting paid by Las Vegas. I think he's under contract to Harrah's or Caesars or something. It's hard to really view that guy through a clean journalistic lens.
Well, and this issue, I think that's the right point. This is like one of those coaching interviews we know about where guys were interviewed for jobs that didn't appear to actually be open, or they were done so that teams could obey the letter of the letter of the Rooney Rule and get around it. This, if they sign him, if he plays for them, I guess we can have that discussion. We can talk about Art Shell and Tom Flores and the history of the Raiders, the proud history of the Raiders in that sense, bucking the NFL and being willing to be groundbreakers. But right now, this is a complete, it's empty. Barring something that will surprise me greatly, it's empty.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also start paying attention to this John Gruden trial when it starts, because it's open court, and perhaps we're going to see some more Dan Snyder emails. Of course, he was sharing, he was in communication with people in the NFL. It wasn't just John Gruden, so could be some ugly stuff forthcoming in the John Gruden trial. When we come back, we'll get back into the Battle of Alberta with our very own Mark Spector as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.